Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the program. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening to the NOLA Drinks Show, friends. As always, yes, one of my very favorite weeks of the year, French Quarter Festival is upon us. Starts this Thursday, April 11th, runs through Sunday the 14th. 20-some-odd stages, 20-plus stages peppered throughout the French Quarter. 1,700 local musicians employed to play, all from this part of the world. Man, it doesn't get any better than that. It is my favorite music festival on the planet. You've heard me say that 100 times. I'm going to say it 100 more. Really, really looking forward to it. I hope if you're in the area or coming to visit the area, get out there and see it. Huh? It's something to behold for four straight days. Great food, great drink. And the music, the whole thing is just awesome. And you couldn't do it in a better neighborhood than the French Quarter, right? So do go check that out. Hey, you know we've been doing this thing with our partners at French Quarter Festival and our good friends at the finest record store in the world, Louisiana Music Factory, there 421 Frenchman Street. It's called our French Quarter Fest series. And yeah, we've been doing a lot of them. It's really cool sitting around talking with musicians that play at the festival. We talk about music. We talk about food. We talk about drink. All kinds of great stuff. And so, yeah, we got one of those in store for you today. Super excited about this one. The great Paul Sanchez and the great John Boutte join us today. If you are familiar with them, then you're familiar with them. If you're not, you should be. Those two have collaborated together. People know John. And I hate to kind of say this because it's sort of cliche, but a lot of people know John from singing the theme song to Tremé, the show on HBO. Paul contributed to that. They've done just great music individually, great music together. Two of the finest musicians that we have to offer, I think, in the city of New Orleans for all kinds of different reasons. So we really wanted to get those two together in one place because it's just perfect for French Quarter Fest. They're both going to be performing separately. Paul Sanchez with his Rolling Road show, and John's got his gig as well. If you're listening on the radio, I'm going to strongly encourage you to get the podcast because, yeah, those two get into a little bit more about some of the famous songs that they've written together and how they came about. And there's some really cool stories that I don't know if have ever been told, or at least never been told to me, and I've never heard them. So go check out noladrinks.com. Podcast is out 2 days at the most after it airs on the radio. Friends, what we're going to do is, as we always do, we're going to be playing some of the music from that Paul and John have made both together and individually. And as we go in and out of the breaks, and then you can go to the website once the podcast is out and see a list of the tracks that we played in order. You can always get them at Louisiana Music Factory or go to louisianamusicfactory.com, order it online, go to the store, as I said, 421 Frenchman Street. Friends, what we're going to do is we're going to take a brief break here on the show, and then we're going to bounce over to our featured interview, our French Quarter Fest series, Paul Sanchez and John Boutte. Come on back.
Lynette, Lillian, Lorna, Lita, Lenora. My lovely sisters who raised me home, I adore ya. My feet may be far from your door, but I keep in my heart. The lessons you taught me when I was a boy.
I learned this song from the brilliant and beautiful Lillian Boutte, one of her many trips back home to New Orleans. It's from a film called New Orleans from around 1936, and in the movie, Billie Holiday sings it. But Lillian pointed out to me that the song was just as important today as it was back then, and I had to agree. All you old-time queens from New Orleans who lived in Storyville, you sang your blues, tried to muse, this is how they pay their bill. The law steps in, calls it a sin to have a little fun. fun.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. As always, you know we are continuing on with our French Quarter Fest series. We're here at Louisiana Music Factory, 421 Frenchman Street. And it's the week of French Quarter Fest when you all are hearing this, so we're really excited about that. Very excited to have my next two guests here as part of the series, John Boutte and Paul Sanchez. John, how are you?
I'm wonderful, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks for making some time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. It's a good break from the country to come back into New Orleans for a while.
Yeah, there you go. You and I are neighbors. You live over in Lacombe, and we're over
in
Old Mandeville. So.
Yeah, about 15 miles away, I guess.
There you go. We hang out at Whole Foods in Mandeville.
Yeah, that's usually where I see you, man. I got to go 12 miles to get, to find some food.
Yeah, there Paul, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Sam, fantastic.
It's good to see you again.
Could be seen.
Yeah, there you go, man. And so you've been on the show. You've been a victim of this show once before. It was a couple of years ago, I think, if I remember right. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, we're having a good time. Remember, we were talking about drinking wine, and we were talking about Trejo, as I recall, over on Tulane.
Gone now,
huh?
Very sad.
Yeah. So what happened with that, since we're on the subject?
I just think that Pauline, who really was the heart and soul of Trejo, she wanted to get it into art. She's going to be teaching art.
Oh, okay.
Selling art and making art.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's a good reason then.
Yeah, it's a great reason. Follow your passion.
Nice. A cool little spot there on Tulane that we're talking about.
Yeah, well, it sure was.
Yeah, that's too bad. But and I know that they had hired a new chef, right, for a little while. Khaleesi was there. And,
yeah, it was great stuff.
Yeah, it was great stuff. Yeah. Well, things always change in the restaurant scene around here, don't they? We'll talk about food and drink in the next segment. Let's talk a little bit about music as we kick things off, you guys. And Paul, I'll start with you. I know you grew up in the Irish Channel, if I remember correctly.
That's
right?
Correct.
Yeah. And so, how'd you get involved with playing music, man? And
I can't remember a time when there wasn't music. You know, that's one thing about growing up poor in the '60s is that the radio was free. And I had five brothers and five sisters, most of them older than me. So there was Elvis, there was Hank Williams, there was the Jackson 5, and there was my mom in the kitchen with Sinatra.
Yeah.
So there was never not music in the house. And we also grew up before AC was everywhere. So the windows were open. Mm. And if music was in somebody else's house, you heard it. Mm. You know, and it's Pete Fountain's half-past marching club came through the neighborhood. It was St. Patrick's Day parade was all music. You know, it was, I don't know. It's been a part of my life since I can remember.
Did you have, like, family members that played instruments and stuff? Or
I had three brothers that played horn.
Okay.
And my oldest brother, George, is a successful actor. He was in Southern Rep in New Orleans for 40 years and... You know, he's very well-respected in the theater community, and he was my inspiration. He was traveling the country acting and directing what used to be called, when they had, like, the orchestras would do the pop music.
Mm-hmm.
He did the Boston Pops and the D.C. Pops, and he was directing them around the country.
Okay.
So he'd come home with these fantastic stories of, you know, getting to meet George Martin, the Beatles producer, and, you know, it made me want the life.
And then you started playing guitar? Is that kind of the first?
I started singing first.
Started singing first.
I was in a musical in the fifth grade, Oliver. I played the Artful Dodger.
You played the Artful. That's a good role.
Yeah.
Okay, right on.
And then when those lights hit me, I started singing and people started clapping. I knew what I wanted to do.
Yeah, you knew what you wanted to do in fifth grade. Right? Well, what about you, John? You grew up in a very musical family, right?
Well, you know, I think almost every New Orleans family is musical in some way or another. But not in particular. You know, my mother and father were not musicians.
Okay.
Further back in our generation, you know, we had people who played instruments, et cetera, et cetera. And, but no, my dad had a very booming, strong voice. And he had an excellent ear because he could whistle perfectly in pitch, right? And, my mother, she couldn't sing at all. I mean, she would admit it, right? But she would sing. She had a great little song that she would sing to the kids, right? Like, no, do, di, do, do, di, do, 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 no, do, di, do, do, di, do, 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 do. It drive you crazy because it never resolves.
It never resolves.
But it would put us right to sleep. Like, well, we're waiting for the end. We're waiting for the end.
There's the dodo right there, right? Going to sleep.
Yeah. So, but, you know, she was very, very, very intelligent, as my father was also. And they knew the value of music, especially to a kid, for their intellect and their confidence. And also their well-being, mm-hmm. overall, you know, the spirituality. Mm-hmm. Music was good for, you know, for me personally, better than going to church. Mm-hmm. but that aside, I remember, you know, I was like on her side begging for a cornet when I was a kid. I had a bad speech impediment. She didn't know what I was saying, and she kind of like shoo-shooed me off. I was just mortified, and I was like, ah, you know. But the next day, she had the cornet I was asking for, and she literally sewed a denim satchel for me to bring it to school and join the band at 8 years old. And, you know, but before that, I was singing to my dog. I would sing so much it would drive my sisters crazy when I was in kindergarten, right? You know, I learned all those tunes, and, you know, I had an older sister who was in college at the time, and I'd be singing, "It's March and we hear the wind blowing you," and on repeat, right? You know, and she finally come out and, you know, some patriotic stuff, man, whatever it was, right? She'd come out screaming, saying, "Make him stop." So, you know, I found the power of the voice, okay. Right? And music itself. But, you know, from there, man, you know, I joined the New Orleans had great music programs in schools, in the public mm-hmm. schools. They had instruments in the band room. Mm-hmm. You didn't have to have an instrument. They had them. They provided them. And we had excellent, excellent music teachers in school, mm-hmm. right? And Miss Stance, Mr. Houston, I could go on and on. Mr. Who's his name? At St. Augustine. Gosh. Humphrey?
That's all right. Yeah. Well, that's all right.
Well, anyway, the point is we had great music teachers, man. Mr. Levine was my my piano teacher at one time. So, anyway, I came up doing that, and also I sang with a lot of little doo-wop groups,
okay.
You know, in the 7th Ward, in the 6th Ward, you know, and in the 9th Ward, you know, mm-hmm. and had a little group called Spirit, and, you know, we were writing tunes and just doing all kind of, you know, singing, you know, just looking for echo, as it would say, right? And then after that, you know, I took a little piano, classical piano when I was in college.
Okay.
And I also used to play for like this little sanctified church on Galveston Street, where Galveston Esplanade. It's the Living Water, this kind of fancy novel before it was like little shack. So to the mortification of all my Catholic relatives, right? Especially oh Lord, he's in the coat. He's in the coat. I said, yeah, but they're swinging. Right? So anyway. So, then, you know, I joined, what did I do? I guess, you know, fast forward to me going to the Army and playing a little music. The way I could get to play music in the Army, I could do it with the choir, right?
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, nobody could tell me I couldn't, you know, be in the company with a private singing, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the rank I'm saying, you know.
Yeah, gotcha.
not properly singing. But, so everybody, you know, I could fellowship with other folks who were not my rank and also make music,
mm-hmm.
you know, which was a great thing. When I got out, I did some banking, et cetera, et cetera. One fateful day I met Stevie Wonder. He told me I had something special, a signature voice. Long story short, I quit my banking job the next day. Mm-hmm. And about a month and a half later, I joined my sister in Europe, and I was traveling all over Europe with her, accompanying her, you know, not singing, but just, you know, doing logistics like I did in the Army.
Like in the Army.
And, And from there, you know, I started doing little cameos, and then eventually, you know, morphed into my own band back here in New Orleans. I wanted to do my own thing.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that was testing waters, and I was so lucky because, man, I had the opportunity during that time. I played with Lloyd Lambert, Ed Frank, Smokey Johnson, Bunsy Johnson. A litany of the Earl Palmer, the great drummer.
Okay.
Herlin Riley, of course, on the younger side, Shannon Powell, all the great drummers, mm-hmm. and bass players. And just, I met Alan Toussaint, right? I was in a studio when they were recording Southern Nights.
Oh, wow, okay.
You know, I saw what he was doing, I just, at 14, when I saw what he did, when I was in a studio with Lillian at 14, that just made me say,
that's what
I want to do.
Yeah.
Right, I saw a future as a young black man, mm-hmm. that this is something I could do and nobody could stop me, you know.
Awesome, yeah.
So, you know, so that's why, and I end up, now I'm here.
Well, Paul, do me a favor. So we're going to take a break here in about 3 minutes, but...
I can talk longer than you.
We last left you at fifth grade as the Artful Dodger. And then did you study too then? Did you get like vocal training through theater?
I didn't study. I wasn't patient enough to study.
Okay.
My older brother, one of my older brothers, Andrew, played guitar and had studied music in college. And he saw that I had an interest. So my mother put a guitar on layaway at Campos. Remember layaway?
Wow.
And had Campos music. Yeah. And my brother-in-law had a co-sign for it because we were so poor she couldn't even get a layaway plan on her own. But she paid it off, and I got the guitar. My brother gave me lessons, and I didn't have much patience. And he would say, what do you want to learn? And I'd pick something easy. And he'd go, all right, I'll teach you that if you let me show you something hard, too. And I'd say, okay, but I wouldn't practice the hard thing in front of him. I'd say, no, I won't do that. And as soon as he left, I'd only practice the hard thing. And I got my first gig when I was 15 in Fat City.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then my first regular gig was when I was 16, playing in the French Quarter. These two guys named Jim and Dave had a regular gig, and my brother knew them, and they were going to go on vacation. And they needed somebody who could play for 2 weeks who was good, but not so good that he'd steal the gig. And I was only 16, so it was perfect, you know. And then by the time, you know, I was in college for music for 2 years, but by then I was already making a living playing.
Okay.
And I didn't stick it out and get the degree. I just kept playing.
Made
it was
way
great
that
times,
yeah.
You know. I was in a band with Vance DeGeneres, and he's since gone on to be in the Louisiana Hall of Fame, Music Hall of Fame. I, of course, had Cowboy Mouth in those days. That was a lot of fun. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you learn by doing that at a certain point, right? And just so everybody knows, that's John's funky ringtone right there.
Yes, sir.
Let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here, and then we'll come back. We're going to talk a little bit about food and drink, French Quarter Fest, more about music.
Yes, yes.
Stuff
nice.
Like that, all that good stuff. Friends are chatting with Paul Sanchez and John Boutte.
Okay.
Come on back.
I was born by the river in a little tent, yeah, just like that river, I've been rolling ever since. It's been a long, long time coming. I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. Well, it's too hard living, but I'm afraid to die, 'cause I don't know what's up there, Lord, beyond the sky. It's been a long. Steps by my porch in front of my door.
right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, French Quarter Fest series, friends, and it is the week of French Quarter Festival when this show's out, and I am chatting with Paul Sanchez and John Boutte. And this is kind of our food and drink segment here, guys. And so we were talking about chartreuse during the break, some interesting chartreuse stories. We're all fans.
Yes.
And I think maybe, unless somebody wants to expand
on it. In moderation.
Yeah.
55% alcohol. I think we might just kind of leave it there. But yeah.
And it's green. It's chartreuse.
It's chartreuse, exactly. And have you ever had the yellow one by chance?
I don't think so.
It's a little more floral, a little less herbal. And then there's actually a VSOP one that's like an aged one that's kind of more like the green, but all handmade by monks still across the board.
Really?
Yeah. It's all still made in a monastery in France.
Wow.
Yeah, secret recipe and all that good stuff. But talking about sort of food and drinks, that's what we do on this show quite a bit. Paul, growing up in the Irish Channel, I think when you were on last time, we talked about not only was there music wafting out of the windows, but smells food. Of people's kitchen food.
Oh, yeah. We lived on the river, so there was the coffee smells and the banana smells. Oh, yeah. And, of course, everybody had big families, Irish Catholic neighborhood. You know, and it was a lot of kids, so a lot of mamas cooking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And so did your mom cook? Did you grow up around
people
cooking in
the family? Oh, yeah, we had 11 kids, so you had no choice but to throw a big pot of something together. You know, Monday was, of course, red beans. Mm-hmm. Wednesday was always succotash, which, of course, is whatever you have in the pantry.
Right. What about you, John?
Oh, yes, man. You know, just like Paul had said about, you know, a big family, I'm number 8 out of 10. And I was thinking just the other day how my mother do it, you know. How did, you know, every morning, man, she would feed all those kids, right? And also, we'd have a lot of kids who would be coming through for breakfast, right?
Like the neighbor kids or something?
Kids on the way to school, right? Okay. You know, and everything like that. You know, and she would feed some of those kids, right? But, we had real, lots of times, very French breakfasts also. I mean, how many of you guys had calf brains, fried calf brains and grits? Polenta for breakfast, man. And it was delicious.
Wow, okay.
I'm telling you, we were like little zombies begging for the brains. If you don't believe it, man, if you haven't tried it, then don't judge me. It's not monkey brains.
not monkey brains. Right. We were talking about, on the last episode, we were actually talking about Singapore, because Helen Jalea was on, and she's from Singapore.
Right.
And there's still rumors that monkey brains get eaten there once in a while.
Yeah. But, but you know, we always had beautiful, beautiful meals, man. And my mom was really an expert in Creole cooking. She made the best everything, man. I'm not gonna lie to you. And my father was a hunter and a fisher, so we always had fresh game, fresh duck, fresh venison. But Dad would catch so much fish that once we've cleaned all the fish that he would catch, I'm talking about redfish, trout, croaker, catfish, you name it, whatever kind of fish were gar.
So did you like you and your siblings were kind of responsible for helping?
We were responsible. We go fishing with him.
Okay.
We clean it all up, man. Mm-hmm. And my mom would be frying fishes, we would clean them. Or we'd be shucking oysters, because he had an oyster guy in Point Lahash, that Percy, man, he was incredible. Guy spoke only in French.
Okay.
And he was an African American guy, very dark, with ice blue eyes, right? And that was my dad's oyster guy. And we'd get sacks and sacks of oysters, man. But back to the fish, whatever we couldn't stick in the freezer, right, he would divide out to the neighborhood. People would be waiting, all the neighbors and everything. So it was, you know, the fishing, and that was very abundant down here, man. But out, you know, in the 60s.
Yeah, right.
What happened, you know, the chemicals killed all the birds.
Right.
You know, we just got the pelicans back.
Right.
But
right.
On a happier note, you know, we also trawled for shrimp. So we had everything fresh, man. I'd eat kawe. That's a turtle, y'all. You know, that's one thing my dad would fix. He also would drive my mother crazy, because he had a special recipe for garlic chicken. And Jerry Brock, who started this business here, he loved my dad's garlic chicken, right? But he would soak it, and he'd make such a big mess in the kitchen. My mom would say, please don't do that chicken. But everybody loved it, right? I'm telling you, it was incredible, incredible, right? And he always, you know, he thought he'd, like, you know, he was always trying to push me on to doing, like, opening a chicken place and doing that, you know. And I was just like, I don't want to be in the kitchen, Dad. Yeah. Especially frying chicken, sorry.
Yeah, especially frying chicken, right. Well, Paul, do you cook, man?
A little bit.
A little bit?
Not much, really. Okay. I'm a joint guy. I'm going to go to grab a po' boy. Like, I grew up with parasols right down the street.
Okay.
I'm going to go, if I'm going to go to eat it all, and I don't eat much. Remember when I lived in the French Quarter for a while, and John lived about two blocks away, he used to ride his bike by, and one day he saw me eating a sandwich on my balcony, and he called up from his bike, it's a rare Sanchez sighting. The creature is eating.
That's right. I never would see him eating, right? And it's so funny, Paul was there. Eating what were you eating, man?
I was having something on the balcony. I don't remember.
But it was like, wow, Paul is actually eats.
A creature in his natural habitat, but he's eating.
But you know what? I was also like, I never thought my mother ate, right? Because I never saw her eat. She was always cooking, never eating, right? But she was eating in between.
Eating,
you know what I'm
okay,
saying?
Okay, yeah, yeah.
So she was feeding everybody. She never sat down to eat, you know what I'm saying? She was eating on
eating
feet.
In between, make sure everyone else is taken care of.
Right, right, yeah. Right. Sometimes nursing and feeding, you know. In fact, when I asked for that cornet, I think she was nursing my baby brother. My baby sister was on one apron string. I was on the other. She said, well, what the hell? Shut up.
Yeah, that's probably a good time to ask, right? Just get the cornet
right.
And get the hell out
right,
of the
right,
way.
Right, right,
Well, and Paul, you're a wine guy, though, right?
I do like wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything in particular these days floating your boat?
I do love Pinot Noir.
Okay.
And I sample, I play at Pearl Wine on Saturdays.
Oh, yeah.
And
right.
The owner, Leora, is a friend. Yeah. So she's always got something special waiting.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of spoiled like that.
Yeah. Leora's a good mutual friend of ours.
There, she's so awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. How are the gigs going there, man?
It's great. I haven't played in 4 months because I've been dealing with some medical issues. So last Saturday was my first gig back.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
And it was great fun. I missed it and good to see some old friends that came out to support me and. You know, I had a great glass of wine.
Yeah, there you go, at the American Can Building. Give Leora a little plug there.
Yep.
On Orleans Avenue. John, so you actually, you don't drink anymore, you said.
Right? Oh, hell yeah, I drink.
Oh, what did I misunderstood?
I drink reasonably. And, you know, when you're from New Orleans, man, when you get the opportunity to stop drinking, you know, and you know other people are doing it too, you know, it kind of helps. So during Lent, you know, I traditionally just stopped, you know. That's those old Creoles, the guys, even the most hardcore alcoholics would stop during Lent. You know
back
what I'm
when
saying?
I was in Cowboy Mouth, I was hanging out with John at his place in the French Quarter on St. Claude and Rampart. And he was barbecuing some rabbit.
Right.
And I had two managers in town, and they really wanted to meet him. You know, they'd heard so much about him. They called me and said, hey, can we come and visit you, meet John Boutte? And I said, hey, John, my two managers want to come by. And he goes, well, baby, I don't know if them city boys is going to want to eat barbecued rabbit. I said, well, they're both from North Carolina, and they can eat some barbecued rabbit.
Some rabbit.
Might want to throw a second bunny on the grill. So they come, and they're nice guys. They're polite. They go, hey, we're going to go to the corner store and buy some alcohol. Do you want something? And John goes, oh, no, man, I ain't drinking right now. And they go, okay. So they go and they buy some bourbon and some beer. And they come back and we start eating. And in the middle of eating, John goes, hey, pass me one of those beers, would you, baby? And I start to pass it. And one of the managers goes, hey, I thought you weren't drinking. Everybody at the table from New Orleans looked at him and went, he's not drinking. It's just a beer. Spicy food, man. What are you, a savage? Spicy. He's got to wash it down.
Well, you guys, let's do this. Let's take a little break here. It's perfect timing, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about French Quarter Festival and stuff like that. You guys stick around?
Yep.
All right. Thanks. Friends, we're chatting with Paul Sanchez and John Boutte here at Louisiana Music Factory French Quarter Fest series. Come on, man.
This stew called New Orleans. Don't forget to bring your greens to the stew called New Orleans.
right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yeah, Louisiana Music Factory is where we are, friends. 421 Frenchman Street, the finest record store on the planet. And we are talking about the finest, in my view, the finest music festival on the planet, French Quarter Fest. This week, if you're hearing the show this week, I think that makes sense, right? I'm going to do the math. You guys, tell me a little bit. I'll start with you, Paul. How many times you played French Quarter Fest? You've done it often, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I don't know how many times. It's been every year since the flood, for sure.
Yeah, okay.
And I don't think before, but every year since the flood.
Yeah, and with the Rolling Road Show, kind of, or that concept each time?
Yeah, they like it.
Yeah, it's cool. And so you kind of have, when you do that and you play that gig, you've had kind of moving parts, right? You bring different musicians in. And
yeah, it's different every year. Mm-hmm. It depends on who's available, who I worked with that year, who strikes my fancy on the way to the gig.
Right. Who likes chartreuse? We're going to leave that one alone, I promise. So that's cool. John, what about you then? You've played Fest a lot too.
Yeah. You know, I got to tell you, the very first festival, the very, very first.
The very first French Quarter Fest, yeah.
It was my sister Lillian, Juanita Brooks, Sadie Blake, and I think Wanda Ruzan. And there were four young ladies, and it was singing, basically a cappella, on the steps right here by the mint.
My most terrifying French Quarter Fest gig was with Lillian, your sister. She hires me. I go to rehearsal. I already know I'm in over my head because I'm not a jazz player. I'm a rock player. But I'm working hard. I got my charts. I'm only playing six songs. Get to the gig, and she hands me the set list. Not one song we rehearsed on the set. And I'm like, baby, what do I do? She goes, you go for it, baby. We get on stage. She proceeds to not play one song that was on the set list she had just handed me.
So now you know where I get it from.
All she did was turn around, look at the band, and start counting, just like you do. I'm just like, what are we even playing?
Wow, she wasn't even calling out a tune.
She was telling out the title of the song. Oh, wow. She just started counting in, man.
And like, so, what did you end up playing? Like, with standards?
I followed the bass player.
Okay. Yeah. And just like jazz standard stuff or something? Or was
it? She was doing standards and gospel.
Okay. And gospel. Okay. Yeah.
So, well, My first one was with Denny Barker.
Wow. Okay.
And I was playing piano. And he asked me, he called me up, and the tune was Louis Armstrong's Hello Dolly.
Nice.
And they had all the cats were from Europe, and everybody was looking at me, and I was just nervous, right, you know. But that was my first one with Danny. And then subsequently I've done many afterwards. It was a really good time because it was a time where our family would come out, my mother would come out, my distant cousins would come out, my close cousins, and everybody would really be, you know, where it was like a family reunion every year. Everybody looked forward to go because I'd be on a stage, Lillian would be on a stage, maybe my niece would be on one. So it's always just a nice festival to go to, man, you know. Very family, family oriented, you know, mm-hmm. not that, I think music is always family oriented. You know what I'm saying? Sure. So you know, yeah. I don't want to, you know, like make it like the Metairie thing where they have family gras, right? Because
put that aside too. I'd rather talk about chartreuse.
All right, I just gotta say, guys, Mardi Gras is for kids. Is for adults. The kids get Christmas. They get Easter. They get Halloween. We already trying to steal that from them, right? So don't let them steal Mardi Gras from us. All right, it's supposed to be debauchery. And it's things that, you know, kids either should see or shouldn't, right? So, you know, that's just a point I want to make, you know. Mardi Gras for adults. Give us out there.
But French Quarter Fest is for everybody.
It is. Now, that's a point also. It's very friendly for the family and people, you know, family. You know, families come out and support each other and friends come out. It's a really beautiful time. And I love it. Even my cousin Vance has a vocal song. He does his sausage, hot sausage sandwiches and po' boys. And
okay, he's got one of the food booths.
So. Right. Yeah. Right. His father was the first one at the Jazz Fest, the first vendor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, Sonny Boy.
Right. Now, Paul, what does French Quarter Fest mean to you, man, as far as just on that sort of philosophical level?
Well, I get to see a lot of my friends that I never get to see. I spent the last 2 years on the road.
So now I'll come home and I can go to a festival. I can see John Boutte and Creole String Beans in the same day.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, and visit with them as well. And the food, you know, I love that about the French Quarter Fest, and I love being on the river.
Yeah.
You know, it's real New Orleans for me. When I was a kid, the French Quarter was where I would escape to.
Yep.
To listen to jazz in the doorways when I was too young, to sneak to the river to drink Miller Ponies with my friends when I was too young.
Right.
And so the river and quarter still calls me, and then that there's music there is feels right, because there's ghosts in those buildings, and they want to listen too.
That's a great point, man. And I that's one of my favorite things about the festival. It actually just feels right, doesn't it? I mean, it's all local musicians. It's a lot of tourists
locals. It's really local traditional jazz musicians. That's because it was started for the traditional jazz, to be honest with you. And from that standpoint, there are a lot of European players and friends of mine from across Europe and all across the world,
mm-hmm.
Japan, Australia, Africa, mm-hmm. Scandinavia.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a corner of the world where people don't love New Orleans music.
Mm-hmm.
And they all come in and they bring their bands. And you know, this is another beautiful thing, man. That it helps spread the traditional New Orleans music. They keep spreading it around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm. it's a great opportunity. Do you guys get a chance to wander? I mean, you said you get to see some friends and stuff, Paul, but do you guys get a chance to kind of wander around and check out some of the acts?
Yeah,
and
it's part of the fun for me.
Yeah,
definitely. You know, get a po' boy and go catch Jamar, whoever I can find, whoever I can run into.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually great, and it's usually a friend.
Go ahead, John.
And I was going to say, and it's also, you know, what I like also is the smaller stages along Bourbon Street and Royal, and, you know, those stages are really fabulous. And I've had some magical performances on those stages, man. I was doing Marie Laveau one year, and everything just blew off the stage as soon as I called her name. I said, Marie Laveau, right? And a wind came up and blew everybody's music and everything. It's just, you know, those kind of moments, man.
That's awesome.
You know?
Yeah. But you guys, do me a favor. We got about 2 minutes left before we're going to take a break and close out the radio portion of the show. Paul, can you tell people where when you're playing at French Quarter Fest and your website and all that good stuff?
Yeah, I'm playing the GE stage on Saturday, April the 13th at 12:30.
Cool.
And you can find out more at www.paulsanchez.com.
Oh, well done. John, what about you?
Well, yes, I'm playing at the French Quarter Fest. I'll be playing Friday, April the 12th at 11:15 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. So you got to get up early and get a good seat.
Yeah.
It's the best time.
This is one.
Yeah, it's Jackson Square. It's in Jackson. It's the acoustics there. Beautiful.
Absolutely.
Because of the buildings, the Cabildo, mm-hmm. the Cantabla, mm-hmm. Et cetera, right? So, it's gonna be really nice, man. I always like doing that venue in particular. Also, if you want to catch up with me, I'm at johnboutte.com. johnboutte.com.
There we go.
I've been having that .com since the 90s. johnboutte.com. And I'm playing a weekly Monday night gig at DBA on Frenchman Street.
Yeah.
And I have a new record that's coming out on the 12th of April. It's called A Well-Tempered Boutte.
That's cool. And you guys are going to stick around for another shot with Noel Drinks, our podcast, and all the things. So we'll talk a little bit more about music and stuff like that. But friends, I want to thank you for listening in this week. If you're listening on the radio, if you are listening on the radio, go to noeldrinks.com, get the podcast. These guys are sticking around. It is the week of French Quarter Fest if you're hearing that. So let me remind you, friends, to be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until then, cheers, y'all.
Standing at the bus stop, just across from Krauss. And I'm waiting for that driver to take me to my heavenly house. And I'll see you there.
At the foot of Canal Street.
What will he wear?
At the foot of Canal Street.
What will the band be playing?
At the foot of Canal Street.
What will the people be saying?
At the foot of Canal Street.
Is your father lover? Does your mother pray?
shy. What are you doing in a place like this? I said I call your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your.
Everybody, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, thanks for listening in this week, friends. As always, it's French Quarter Fest week, one of my favorite weeks in the city in the entire year. Hope you enjoy the conversation that we're having with John Boutte and Paul Sanchez. You know, I love doing this series, and this has been one of my favorites, and that's saying something. Really cool stuff. We're going to bounce right back over to Louisiana Music Factory and continue our conversation. You don't want to miss this part. These guys tell some stories about some of the songs they've penned together and how they came to be. Probably stuff you've never heard before. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Noel Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you guys. Thanks for sticking around listening to the show. As always, our French Quarter Fest series, talking with John Boutte and Paul Sanchez. Guys, thanks for taking some time.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
You're
absolutely
welcome.
How did you guys meet?
Through Michel Schacht.
That's right.
And it was Michel had take speaking of food. She had used my mother's recipe for calas, which are rice, like rice beignets.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't speak Spanish or French, a calas, a beignet is like a donut or a pastry.
Mm-hmm.
But the calas are made from rice, and beignets are made from flour, of course. So Michelle did a party, and she invited a bunch of singer-songwriters, Paul Sanchez, the guy to get the... The guitar player, the blues guy, man. Come on.
Blues guy.
Yeah, come on, man. He's very famous.
Here in town? Walter Wolfman Washington
No.
Or
Ah, jeez, man. What's this guy's name?
This is somebody at the party.
Oh, he's a Grammy Award winner cat, man. You know what I'm talking about.
Not from New Orleans.
No, he's not from New Orleans.
Oh, okay.
George Benson?
He's younger. Blues guy, beautiful voice, beautiful player, man. I can't think of his.
That's all right. If it comes to you, we'll come back.
Ugh, this guy's name.
Because we could be here guessing for a while.
Right.
This guy, not from New Orleans.
Gosh, man. It would be embarrassing to call his name. I say, what? You didn't remember me? You probably hear this story and say, yeah, you didn't remember you.
He probably doesn't hear the show. He's all right.
So there was a jam session.
Okay. Yeah.
John sings high and I sing low, and it just kind of fit. And we started hanging out, writing together.
Right, and Paul had asked me, you know, had I been writing. I said I had a hiatus for a while, and I just wasn't interested. You know, I had songs, but I just didn't do them, right? And mm-hmm. then, you know, Paul and I, man, had a session one day, and we just spat out like three or four tunes, man.
We wrote Foot of Canal Street.
Sisters.
On our first session. And it was just, I was just like, wow, this doesn't happen every day. This is a really good song. Right.
That's a great song.
Do you want to write another one? And he goes, no, baby, I got to book my European tour. I don't have time. And I said, oh, we really should. He goes, I'll tell you what, we'll get together soon and write a song about my sisters. Their names are Lolette, Lynette, Lillian, Lorna, Lita, and Lenora. I said, man, that's already half a song. It just needs some chords.
And
I said, let's do it. I'm all hot to do it. He goes, no, I got to book this gig. So he gets on the phone with Europe, and he starts booking on his tour in Europe. And I'm starting to write the song, and I sing it to him. He tells the person on the phone, hang on a second, baby. And he goes, change this, change that. Okay, and he get back, he keep booking his gig. And it took him about 25 minutes to book his gig. And by the time he finished, we had finished writing Sisters.
Right, wow, exactly. No right. And okay, then we recorded it. Look, you know, we didn't want to go in the studio to do a demo. But we wanted to hear it sound. And it's just he and I. So when we went, we rented a limousine. and we had a little dat player, and we just rode around the city, man, boozing and having fun and singing these songs and recording them all. We went from the river, we went through City Park, Audubon Park, the lakefront.
It's usually really fun sessions. It starts out, you know, John has a unique perspective on the world. So there's a band we have called Two Bands Rolling.
Right.
We wrote that one because he came by my house one day on his bike, and he goes, "Babe, we got to write a song. I just saw some shit." Yeah. I said, "What'd you see?" He goes, "I was riding by Jackson Square, and two bands was cutting heads on opposite corners, and one of the bands had taken a break to eat some Popeye's fried chicken, and when they got back to work, the pigeons started eating that chicken, and I thought to myself, damn, times is hard in New Orleans when even the birds is eating each other."
That's it. Pigeons eating chicken on Jackson Square. Wow, man, two bands. You know, I need to get the band to do that, bro. That's a great tune.
That's a great tune. That is also a good tune. Yeah, absolutely.
I was playing a faster version of Meaning or a Message.
That was Doreen and Glenn were playing at it.
After we wrote it, like a year, it was like right after Katrina, I was back and playing the... I went to the first crawfish boil that I was going to after Katrina. And I had not met Glenn David Andrews yet, but we had written him into the song. Yeah. In this corner is Andrew's bone. And this young man walks up to me and looks down at me and says, "You wrote a song about me." I said, "I did?" And he smiles. He said, "Yeah, I'm Andrew's bone."
Keeping that sixth ward in his tone.
Keeping that sixth ward in his tone.
When was the last time you guys played together? It's been a while.
Oh, gosh, man. It's been a while,
yeah.
He's come up at DBA and played with me a little bit. You know, I've been, you know, with the loss of my dear friend Todd, man, you know, the last two years have been, you know, just, you know, I've been almost like, you know, he played great, but, you know, it was...
Tell people who Todd is.
Christopher Todd Duke mm-hmm. was a New Orleans guitar player who played with everybody. He played with George French, Bob French, Jermaine Basil, you name it. Mm-hmm. You name any jazz player in the city, vocalist in particular, he probably accompanied him. He also worked with a lot of, he had his own band, the New World Funk Jazz Orchestra, and he worked with a lot of people, man. Professionally worked with myself. He also... What's the cat? Will it go around in circles? Billy Preston. Yeah. Just, you know, but he was such a great musician and accompanist. He was the best, man. And a great side man. He never complained. He was always, his favorite a quote he would use was, "You can't rush beauty." You know, because he never did rush either, man. Even when we were late for a plane, he just moved slow, man. But what a guy!
Yeah. And he played with you for years.
Oh, it was about 18 years.
Yeah,
yeah. Our first gig, man. I think he thought I was kidding him. I said, "Look, man, we're taking a private plane to the Abacos Keys, and then we're getting on a private yacht, and we're going to be yacht hopping through the Bahamas." And I told him how much money he was going to be making, and he looked at me like I was crazy. But that was our first gig together, and you know, he's been by my side ever since. You know, he passed in January from colon cancer. Go, guys! Make sure you go and have your colon check. Get a colonoscopy. It's not that bad, and it's going to save your life.
It will save
your life, man. You know. So just do it. You know, if you're a certain age, you got to do it.
Yeah, 50,
you know?
Right? Yeah.
I waited till 57. I was mortified. I was for the results, and luckily I had a clean, very... I don't have to go back for another 15 years.
Okay.
If I last that long. Oh, yeah, right. You know.
So
now, I'm in New Orleans, right?
do you guys think you might do some more collaboration in the future?
Oh, I'm absolutely positive.
I'm sure,
man.
Will. Yeah, you know, when time's right.
Yeah.
Right.
His life changed, and he moved out to the country in Mandeville.
Right. Right.
And then my life changed. I got divorced and just sort of split town for about 3 years. Yeah. And now I'm back and settled and chances are we'll see each other more.
Yeah, you know, because this last record I did, it's no originals, not my originals, just songs that I wanted to do. And I know my next record is going to be original, so I'm quite sure.
Okay.
I'll probably be tapping into Paul's expertise and aggravating a song out of him.
While you're booking a tour, he'll just sit there, he can write the tune.
Aggravate a song out of tune. Write me a tune.
I'd love to.
Does that work pretty well when he does that, Paul?
He's so easy. You know, he's got so much music in him, and he's got such a colorful way of expressing himself verbally. So a lot of times I'll just start a song and give it to him, and he doesn't have the best memory in the world.
Right.
So he'll sing it back to me, but he will be singing a different melody and some different words, and he'll go, "Is that it?" And I'll go, "That's it."
That's it. That's it. Nailed it.
Nailed it. Because usually what came out of him naturally is better suited to what we're going for, especially if we're writing for him. And so it's just better. He's got so much melody in him.
Well, thank you, Paul.
Well, and John, you're probably my very favorite singer in the world.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, and and somebody I love also is Sam Cooke.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I know you do too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Sam was an incredible guy.
You are one of the only people on the planet that I know that can actually pull off "A Change Is Gonna Come" and do it well. And that's a tough song.
Yeah, it's a hard tune, man, because you know you got to feel it. You got to feel it like Sam felt it and mean it like he meant it. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He wrote that tune, I guess, 60 years ago, man. And you know what? It's still timeless, and it's still appropriate, man. Yeah. And shit ain't changed. So what the fuck is up with that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
America?
Yeah, thank you. That is the truth.
Indeed.
You know?
Paul, are you writing right now?
You know, I had an explosion of material in the last 3 years, and I have a record that's getting ready to come out, and I don't know that I'm going to do anything for a while after that. For one thing, nobody really makes albums anymore, so right. I'm really saying this is my last album.
Okay.
And beyond that, release a song here and there maybe, but, mm-hmm. you know, I'm 60 this year, and the business has changed, and I got to find a different way to go about it than just putting out a lot of music, which I lived for when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I have it. It's a musical trail of musical postcards I left to myself.
That's money in the bank,
bro.
On.
One day it will be.
I think that's how I look at it. You know what I mean? You know, even if, you know, maybe not now, you know. But probably when you're dead and gone, somebody's going to get all that money.
Well, we made some money on Foot of Canal Street.
Yeah, we did. That's true,
and
man.
And then when the Treme Show used John's song, Treme song, mm-hmm. I was 15 years old.
Right.
Hadn't made him any real money, and suddenly it did.
And then suddenly it did. Right.
So you never know.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, and I didn't necessarily want to bring it up, but I think that show brought you guys to the world in a lot of ways, right?
Well, it did, man. I got touched by TV. That's what I did. I got touched by. I've been working my ass off for 30 years. Nobody gave a rat's ass. Right? All of a sudden, I got on TV, and then I was the best thing since sliced bread, right? I ain't did anything different. But I'm so grateful, man, to David Simon and HBO for coming here and, you know, giving me that opportunity, man, and a lot of other people.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a pity that Jindal and his infinite ignorance just shot the film industry in the foot.
Yeah.
You know, but he just, you know, he left a shit poor boy for the whole state.
Without a doubt.
Right? And now, where is he now?
Hopefully nowhere near me. It would be.
Well, the point is that, you know, that's how they do, you know. That's how they do.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And unfortunately, that's how they do. But it looks like the industry's coming back, man, and not as strong as it was, and we were running with it, man. And then we gave it away to Atlanta.
Yeah, now it's
you
all
know just
Atlanta.
Gave it away to Atlanta. And not only that, now people who you know this is the truth. I wrote the Treme song. Nobody had said put. I don't think anybody had invoked the word Treme in a song before I did. if you did, please let me know.
Okay.
Right. I don't think you're gonna find that though. My point is that, you know, I had to move to the North Shore because I couldn't afford the Treme. So, you know, the model that they have going on now, disaster, fix it up, we're going to pull people out, and that's what's happening in America.
That is what's happening, you know, in America.
And that's what happened. That's what's happening in New Orleans. Tremaine needs to come, HBO needs to come back and do another series and see the real tragedy that the levee failure left.
That's a great point, John. And I actually really appreciate
that. That's the story,
that.
Baby.
That's the story. No
you
doubt.
Want to know the story? That's the story, Morning Glory.
There it is.
That's what my mom would say.
Yeah.
She actually said, what's the story, Morning Glory? And I would say, that's the story, Morning Glory. And you know what? I'm not happy about it. You know, because, I mean, I love my city, man. And, you know, I love my neighborhoods. And I love what we created. You know, and, you know, now we just... It ain't, you know, it's slowly but surely walking out the door.
Something that we talk about on the show quite a bit is understanding the healthiness of the neighborhoods, and not just the French Quarter or the Marigny where we're sitting right now.
Right.
It's the neighborhoods that are around us now.
Right.
And what comes from those neighborhoods is what New Orleans is in a lot of ways, right? The music, the food, the people that work in the music industry, and the people that work in the hospitality industry also are coming from those places. If we don't have healthy neighborhoods in our environment...
Where are you going to stay? Would you think you'd live under the bridge and then go work at one of the hotels?
It's respecting the cultures, too.
Absolutely.
Which the new people that have come to town don't understand. So now you have Mardi Gras used to close at midnight.
They wanted
cops
to go
come in and shut it down. It doesn't really end anymore. The party keeps rolling. Mm-hmm. Used to be like, what was the other thing I was just thinking of the other day? But St. Patrick's Day cakes.
Right.
You know, king cakes used to be Mardi Gras thing.
Right. Yeah.
There wasn't any Christmas king cake.
Right.
St. Patrick's Day king cake. Right. You waited. Right. That's what made them special. Because let's face it, they're not great. They're just cinnamon rolls with icing and color. But if you wait and just have them for 2 weeks, they're awesome.
Yeah.
But now, because people have... from elsewhere, and they want their king cake in December, or they want their king cake in March. Yeah. There's the St. Patrick's Day king cake and the Christmas Day king cake. It's crazy.
Right, look, let me tell you. When I was coming up, if my old grand aunt would catch us with Mardi Gras beads or mask on after Ash Wednesday, you'd be drowned in holy water. But my point is that, you know, and I always drives me nuts, man, because afterwards, you know, the city want to make some money. Find anybody wearing beads after on Ash Wednesday. You know what I'm saying? Come on, man. It can't be Mardi Gras every day. That's not New Orleans. We're more than that.
Absolutely.
You know? And you know what? Sometimes you gotta close your blouse and stop showing your tits.
Yep.
Right? Yep. At least, you know, it can't be 24/7, man. You know? And New Orleans was never like that 24/7. We got traditions, man, you know. And the real locals know those traditions, and they follow them, you know. And the ones who fall on the wayside try to make their Mardi Gras 24/7 all year round, you know.
I think we know that's not what this,
this
town's about.
And, you know, it's always like, you know, I understand, you know, it's a party city, man, you know. It always has been, like Paul said. We used to sneak up on Bourbon, you know. But we used to go to try and see the strippers. We didn't give a damn about the music. They're trying to catch the door open, right? And the bouncer, you know, the doorman would always tease the little black kids. Like, So, yeah, man. But, you know, I mean, but on a serious side, man, you know, now with the gig economy, you know, and Airbnbs, you man. Look, I stayed in the Airbnb. I stayed in an Airbnb, not because I booked it, but one of my friends booked it right around the corner from literally a block and a half from where I grew up.
Wow.
Right? And the girl who was running it didn't know me from a hole in the ground. She didn't have to. Mm-hmm. But come on, man, you moved in that neighborhood.
Right.
You bought a house in my neighborhood. You understand?
Right.
I walked past that house for 30 years, 40 years when I was a kid, you know what I'm saying? Or coming up, whatever, right? And you don't know who, where you're moving into, you know? Not only that, around the corner was Mr. Piku's house, who wrote the Purple Rose of Cairo. She didn't know none of this.
Wow.
You know, Mr. Jack Willis, great trumpet player, man. Just the whole idea, but what I'm just saying is, and the reason my friends had booked the place, and, you know, I didn't want to drive back home, so just stay, you know. So we stayed the night there. Got bit by a spider. I'm like, Airbnb my ass, man. You know, I want room service.
Yeah, room service.
Right, right. I want room service. I'm like, oh, shit. You know, honestly, man. And how do the hotels let them get away with that? I thought the mob would close that down most tick, man, like that.
Well,
you know?
Yeah, that's a whole...
Are you kidding?
We'll have to do another show on this. That's a whole different topic, too. You thought, like, when Uber and Lyft came in, how does that actually work?
Right.
You know, the hacks used to just, like, if you're in New York, they kill them.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, so anyway, man, there's some good things about it and everything, but you know what? It never works out well for poor people. That's just a fact, man.
That's
you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It doesn't, but, you know, sooner or later, something's going to have to give, you know? I can tell you that, you know.
Well, you guys, let's on that note, let's we'll close. No. That's
a,
these
I hate
are
to
all
make you on a,
no.
On a dose of freaking reality.
Fair. That's it. Well, that's good. These are good points you're making, John.
Reality,
I appreciate
man.
That. Well, you guys, really quickly, can tell Paul, what's your website again, man?
www.paulsanchez.com.
And John?
I'm www.johnboutte.com.
John Paul.
I'll double you.
Thanks you both for making some time.
Thanks for
having
us.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure, my pleasure. Right, friends, a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back with my parting shot. Yep, everybody, thanks for listening into the Noel Drink Show this week. As always, friends, I really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with John and Paul. It's been a lot of fun doing this French Quarter Fest series. Yeah, we've been doing a lot of them. I hope you've been enjoying them. And as I've said before, we're going to keep doing this. We're doing this year-round because our good friends at French Quarter Festivals have Satchmo Fest coming up in the summer. They do all the holiday stuff in December. There's all kinds of stuff that they're always up to. And, you know, music and all this stuff that we're talking about in the French Quarter series happens year-round in New Orleans. Go figure. So, yeah, we're going to keep doing this series. And as I said, we probably won't do quite as many in a short period of time as we've been doing because we wanted to do a whole bunch leading up to French Quarter Fest. But certainly... don't fret, more to come. Next week's show, friends, going to be a really, really good one. We are talking with three cocktail luminaries with more knowledge than I can possibly imagine when it comes to the history of cocktails. Specifically, more or less specifically, we're going to be chatting about vintage cocktail books and their relevance today. And you may go, well, I don't get that. They're very relevant today for a whole host of reasons. The context of the drinks that we drink, the stories about from where they've come to where they are now, all kinds of really cool stuff. And those three cocktail luminaries are our good friend Jeff Beachbum Berry, the tiki author, historian, bar owner of Latitude 29. That's where we're going to be taping the show. Greg Bohm, who owns Cocktail Kingdom, but also has started an extensive cocktail book library up there in New York City. And Jim Meehan, the very fine cocktail author, journalist, and historian as well. Super fascinating conversation coming up next week with those guys. Yep, so here we are with our parting shot, friends. It is French Quarter Fest week. You know, one of the things that when we've been doing this series that I like to avoid, whenever the musicians are on, our guests are on, I try not to ask them, you know, how would you define your music? What is your genre? We always like to put people in little boxes or make things very black and white. And the one question, which they seem to like, and we talk about this sort of off the air, I ask them who their influences are. Because to me, that paints a better picture of where they're coming from and some of the context in which their music happens. This all happens in a context. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. And not asking them to define specifically what they do, but ask people who have influenced what they do. And I think that's a really good way to go about things. Now, one of the songs, friends, that we played on the show, collaboration there between Paul Sanchez and John Boutte, A Stew Called New Orleans, I think speaks to this well. Where am I going with this? Well, the city of New Orleans, you know, it defies genre. There are all kinds of influences. We've talked a lot about this on the show. If you're from here, you know all this. All the different cultural influences that we have from different ethnic groups that have made their stamp on the city. The culinary influences, all the different musical influences, architecture, art, so many different things have gone into the stew that we call New Orleans. You never know what you're going to get in a particular bite when you have a bite of stew, right? There's a lot of stuff going on in it. And that's kind of the way that this city works. The city's a mix of tradition and improvisation. It's a mix of different cultures and outlooks. Now, one of the things that I like about French Quarter Festival I think it really represents and shows off that concept so well. You can hear trad stuff, traditional stuff, right? Traditional jazz on some of the stages. You can hear new stuff. There's hip hop. There's all kinds of different things. Genre bending music. You can hear things that you expect, and you can hear things that you don't expect. Now, a friend of mine recently told me, leading into Mardi Gras, and they were talking about Mardi Gras Day, but I think it actually is quite relevant for the French Quarter Fest too. On Mardi Gras Day, if you've planned more than two things to do specifically, then you have planned too much. And as I said, I think that works for the French Quarter Fest. Now, what do I mean? Now, if you basically overplan, you may miss out, and you may cheat yourself of seeing something that may come from the unexpected, the unplanned, the undiscovered. One of the joys of French Quarter Fest, at least for me, is wandering around and seeing what catches your eyes and your ears. Because it is a smorgasbord of things to discover and stumble upon. So absolutely, do the traditional. If you have, I have favorite bands and friends that are musicians that I go and see every year because it's part of my traditional experience with French Quarter Fest. So do the traditional. Look at the schedule. Go see your favorites. Go check it out. But make sure that you reserve some time to also do the improv. Stroll around and see what you discover. You may just hear and see something joyous that you didn't expect. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.